Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB Trades Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. We focus quite a bit on volatility in global markets in recent podcasts, and it seems to show a few signs of abating. Interestingly, after a few questions about how increasing US interest rates will clash with inflationary government expenditure and also tariff wars, we're starting to get an increasing number of questions about whether or not now is the time to rethink global investments. To talk through these questions and how one of Australia's best known global investors is responding, I have Chris Weldon, Portfolio Manager of Magellan, with me today. Chris, thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So Chris, what are your thoughts about the current return to volatility in the market that we're experiencing?
I think return to volatility is right. Volatility across a series of asset classes, including equities, has been low for an extended period. This feels like a return to a more normal level of volatility from a period of unusually low volatility. Probably the more surprising observation to us has been the relative absence of volatility for many years, despite a number of global concerns and global risks. And I think that in itself offers some degree of insight into the recent buoyant state of investor psychology around the world.
So people are... Yeah, it has been really interesting to observe. It's just been a march higher, right, for several years. Yeah, and people just assumed it was going to march higher, and then all of a sudden you think people are starting to go, it's changing, and there's a divergence of opinions on where things are going to go, and that's what has brought volatility back to the market.
I think that's largely correct. I mean, it seems over the last few years, as you mentioned, regardless of the news, whether it was good news or bad news, markets just kept marching higher. That may have shifted. That doesn't mean we know it will continue or won't continue. Perhaps we go back to that old dynamic where markets just continue moving higher regardless of the news. But maybe that has shifted, and you can see evidence recently that markets are finally responding to some of the events transpiring out there.
I think your point about markets responding is really interesting, but they seem to be responding to company results. They are responding to economic indicators, which are highly variable all over the place, right? Every country is experiencing something quite different at the moment, I think. And some of it's totally unprecedented from a historic perspective. And also the socio-political environment's quite interesting as well. So it's rather than just fundamentals now, it seems, that people are responding to. What are your thoughts on the outlook for global markets now?
Yeah, I think we'd agree with nearly all of those things. It has been a mixture of both the economic and social developments, so the macro developments, as well as the company-specific developments. So let's touch on all of that, because there has been a lot for the market to unpack and digest over the last number of months, last 6 months to 12 months. On the macro side, we can start with, as you mentioned, unprecedented fiscal policy developments, particularly in the United States, with a large dose of fiscal stimulus being added to a strong economy at full employment. You won't find that in any economic textbook.
Yeah.
That's a new development.
Yeah, when I go back to uni, I'm pretty sure that was not one of the things they told you to do.
Keynes said you do the opposite.
Yeah.
So that this is different. This is unprecedented. Typically, policymakers are removing the proverbial punch bowl from the party at this point in the cycle rather than adding to the punch bowl. So that is a important macro development. We've also got monetary policy around the world gradually becoming less accommodative and maybe on a pathway to a more restrictive setting. Central banks, of course, are signaling they plan to neutralize or reverse these massive quantitative easing programs, which have provided a material amount of support to markets over the past few years. Third, we've got rising trade and geopolitical tensions between the US and China. This is still a live issue. We'll see President Trump and President Xi meet at the G20 meeting next week. We'll see what comes
maybe
of that.
Maybe Trump won't go. Maybe there'll be rain and he'll just stay at home in his hotel.
Can't fly the helicopter in the rain.
Yeah.
I mean, we've also had the midterm elections in the United States. There is, as you referenced, economic and social volatility across a number of large emerging markets. Another point, and this is ongoing, is just the instability across Europe. So you've got Brexit negotiations underway, you've had the recent Italian elections, and ongoing budget negotiations there. And then there's the recent announcement from Angela Merkel that she's transitioning out of her leadership role in Germany. And of course, this country hasn't been immune from that political instability as well. So that's one other thing. On the macro side, all these developments the markets had to digest thus far in 2018. And there's puts and takes and opportunities and risks in all of that. And then there's the micro or company specific developments. And we've just come through the third quarter 2018 reporting season for a number of our companies around the world. And there's been some unusually large stock price movements as companies have reported. And of course that is adding to the recent volatility. You asked about our outlook for global markets. Firstly, we'll be honest and acknowledge we haven't the faintest idea where markets are going in the short term. But as I think back to the macro issues that I just mentioned, I'd say what we're most concerned about at Magellan for Markets is a disruptive rise in interest rates. We think the odds of a disruptive increase in rates has increased to an elevated level. And this could be caused by those building inflationary pressures in the United States with the Trump administration adding stimulus to an economy at full employment. And or it could be caused by this massive reduction in central bank support to markets through ending their QE programs or engaging in quantitative tightening. So if rates move higher than the market anticipates, this could cause all assets, including equities, to be repriced. And we think the probabilities of that outcome have increased. And we've deliberately had a defensive and cautious positioning in our portfolios since the very start of 2018, and that hasn't changed through the year.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so it's just sort of last week or late last week, there were some comments from various parts of the Fed saying, you know, we're going to be careful now. We knew that we were going to be increasing. You can't keep rates at these ridiculously low levels indefinitely, but we are watching what's going on. It was the first time we've really heard that from them, that they are now starting to be a little bit cautious about not over-tightening. Yeah. It's still a concern for you guys, though, you're thinking about
that. Yeah, I think it is. I think the first point to make is the Fed in the US has a dual mandate, which is a little different from other central banks around the world. So their mandate in the United States includes both price stability, which is quite usual for many central banks, but in the US it also includes full employment. So they their policy settings will be determined
tough
by
job.
those two mandates. It is a tough job because they can be pulling in different directions at any point in time. But the Fed has also been quite clear that their policy actions will depend on incoming data. They will be data dependent, is what they've said for a long time now. So in the context of that dual mandate, let's explore some of the recent data coming out of the United States. On the employment side, the unemployment rate in the US is currently 3.7%. That's as low as it's been since 1969. And the US economy has added jobs now for a record 97 months. So I think they can tick the box on full employment. You know, that part of the mandate is satisfied. The second part of the mandate is of course, price stability. And we think the data points, we at Magellan think the data points around US inflation may be some of the most important to markets over the near to medium term. The Fed has stated for a long time now that they consider price stability to be roughly 2% growth in core inflation year on year. Well, core inflation in the US has been above 2% for the past 8 months now. And what's more, wages growth in the US has been accelerating through this year. And through most of 2018, annual wage growth was running at the sort of 2-2.5% level. But at the most recent reading back in October, this has accelerated to 3.1%. Yeah. So we are seeing these inflationary pressures building in the system. And while there's certainly no certainties in any of this, I think the incoming data in the United States suggests to us that the probabilities favour ongoing interest rate increases.
Okay, so in that context, and also adding in the additional complexities of trade wars in particular, so these issues around tariffs and so on, any sectors of the market that you're particularly cautious about, the ones you think are most at risk?
Yeah, it's a good question. Again, on a short-term basis, we don't know how sectors are going to perform, but If our concern around higher interest rates in the US is well-founded, then it might follow that higher interest rates may not be supportive to sectors that have been favoured for their high yield and relative stability over the last few years. You know, those so-called bond proxies that have been bid up in recent years given low prevailing interest rates around the world. These were almost the next best thing compared to a bond. So they got bid up as bonds got bid up around the world with these QE programs. So that trade, again, there's no certainty, but that trade could reverse. Just as they got bid up as rates were falling, should rates increase, we may say that may see that trade reverse itself. So that could be one sector just to be mindful about. And then, of course, certain emerging markets, particularly those who have borrowed a lot in US dollars, may also feel some pressure from higher US interest rates, and also to the extent that that drives the US dollar higher against other global currencies. What we also have to be very honest about is we don't know how much of this is currently priced into markets. You know, this is not unique knowledge to us, and to the extent the market is already thinking about this, some of it may already be priced into markets as well. So there could be some calibration may have already happened
around some of these things. The emerging markets one is very interesting. There's certainly plenty of people concerned about it, but it doesn't seem to be hurting developed markets as much as you might imagine.
Yeah, I think that's largely correct. And most of the emerging market developments have been country specific, almost idiosyncratic to that, to the certain countries. I mean, the Brazil elections, the Brazil economy, that isn't having much of a bearing on how the United States economy is performing, likewise with Europe.
There was certainly some talk about Turkey, I'm going to say 2 to 3 months ago, and concerns that there would be massive contagion throughout European banks. And then a couple of months later, no one's talking about that anymore.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's correct. Of course, we do have some of these things bubbling away in developed markets as well, like Brexit, which we'll learn more about in the coming weeks as Theresa May tries to get her government across the line. But, you know, we've got a line in the sand at the end of March next year, and we'll find out if we have a soft Brexit or a hard Brexit or something in between. But it's not just emerging markets that have these concerns or these developments. It's also some of the developed markets as well.
So there have been sell-offs around the world, and you know some sectors are actually under quite a bit of pressure already. So some, certainly if you look at Chinese stocks and various other markets, they've been sold off really hard this year. And in addition to that, certain sectors, so tech's had a bit of a rough couple of months. Anything that you think is starting to look like good value at this point in time? Do you think the risks are priced in for some of these things?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. And with this recent volatility, I'd say there are a number of businesses that have hit our radar again, which we may have covered for a long time at Magellan and we do a lot of work on, but we haven't really sharpened the pencil because valuations have kept us away from them to date, but that has changed recently. And you're right, it has been shares of businesses in emerging markets, particularly China, over the last few months. It has been businesses, certain businesses that we already own in the tech space, but other businesses in the tech space have sold off recently, and so we are spending more of our time in those businesses at the moment, whereas for a long, long time we simply weren't comfortable going there, investing in those businesses purely on valuation grounds, but they're back on the radar.
Okay, so the quality's there, you're just waiting for the price to get to a point that you like.
That's right, that's kind of how we spend most of our time at Magellan. Is the first step in our process is approving things on quality grounds. And sort of once they make it through that hurdle, constructing a portfolio often comes down to conviction around that quality relative to anything else we can own, and also changes in price, where we also have to be mindful. I mean, price changes much more frequently and it seems to a much larger degree than value. And so you're right, when we do see these big movements in share prices in certain markets and certain companies, that gives us an opportunity to potentially own things that we haven't because they were too expensive.
Any particular names you'd be happy to mention?
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, we do have a fairly defensive and cautious posture at the moment in the portfolio. And of Magellan, we've always had two objectives for our global fund. And one of those objectives is downside protection. And so that's definitely something we are focused a lot on at the moment. And there are businesses in the portfolio currently, like a HCA Healthcare, which is the largest private sector operator of hospitals in the United States, almost a similar business to a Ramsay Healthcare, but based entirely in the United States. There's also businesses like Kraft Heinz, which is a manufacturer and seller of foods, so quite a stable business there, but it has some consolidation optionality attached to it. And I think it's the combination of a few things for both of those businesses where we have real conviction in the quality of the businesses. They play in quite stable end markets. And also, we regard the prices being at a material discount to intrinsic value. Those sort of three things combined give us comfort that they are really interesting investments for our clients. They should satisfy both the objectives we have of compounding capital at a satisfactory rate, but also providing that downside protection to clients.
So for those investors who are heavily overweight domestic equities, and that's many of our investors, many of them, should they be concerned about some of the risks we were talking about earlier at this point in time? I do hear it when I'm talking to investors.
Yeah, well, I think the answer to that depends somewhat on each investor's individual international exposure and investment horizon circumstances and so on. Speaking personally, when markets are declining, I tend to get excited rather than concerned. I tend to get most concerned when markets are moving sharply higher and investors appear to be accepting increasing levels of risk. So when markets are declining, we get to own more of these really high quality businesses we invest in for our clients, where we have conviction in the long-term fundamentals, and we get to own them at a cheaper price than they were available for yesterday. So we think that's a great outcome. There's also, we should mention, a lot of these businesses are buying back their own stock in the market. They're engaging in share buybacks, and that's how they allocate some of their profitability. And to the extent that they can go and repurchase their own shares at cheaper prices, that's a value accretive outcome to our clients. So, you know, we tend to get, as I said, more excited rather than more cautious when markets are falling. It's also worth remembering intrinsic value of businesses tend not to change nearly as much as the price of those businesses. So, you know, we're talking about tech. We've had another sort of sharp movement down in some technology names overnight, and that's been happening for a few weeks now. I think Alphabet was down another 4% last night.
They're big moves. I mean, it's amazing how quickly some of this happens.
That's right, but I don't think the value of a business like Alphabet changes by a couple of percent in 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Indeed, we think, you know, the intrinsic value for a business like Alphabet and some of its peers compounds higher over time. So while we see all the headlines around falling prices, we don't think intrinsic value for our investee companies are falling, and that leaves us excited rather than concerned. And it's also probably just worth mentioning that we've been holding elevated levels of cash in our global portfolios because we've been more defensive since the start of the year. So we've got plenty of dry powder available to redeploy into these markets should they continue to sell off.
So the next question I was going to ask you, you kind of answered it, was relating to timing, because again, with many of our investors, a lot of them know that they do want more exposure to international markets. A lot of them feel that they've missed out on the run-up over the last few years, but they worry about the timing, right? So they're very concerned, and it's kind of like, I know I need more international, but I'm not sure now is the right time.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that one?
I honestly don't know how to define when is or is not the right time to, yeah, to diversify globally, but a couple of thoughts. Look, generally speaking, Australian investors are, by nature of our fairly concentrated economy, but highly concentrated share market, highly exposed and generally overweight to a certain small number of sectors. So I do think the argument for international diversification is always strong, but it gets stronger and stronger as share markets around the world are declining and becoming cheaper. And I think just on that point of market valuations, as we look at it on our numbers, the ASX 200 is trading on about 14.5 times next year's earnings. That's exactly the same forward multiple that the MSCI World Global Share Index is trading at. So at roughly the same forward multiples, investors can get exposure in their portfolios to different regions, different sectors and so on by investing internationally. So I can't say today is the right time, but I don't see a lot of evidence arguing against now being a good time to diversify globally.
That's a very good answer. Any final tips for investors who are in this market, very unsure about where things are going, with good reason, because there's a hell of a lot going on around the world at the moment. Anything they should be keeping an eye out for?
I don't think the secrets for navigating this market are any different from any other market. And I think it's always worth sort of stepping back to basics. In fact, I don't think there are any secrets to good investing at all. It's all kind of been out there for a long time now. But investors, I think, would do well to try to remain rational, objective, disciplined, and maintain that long-term perspective. Try not to get caught up in the short-term price movements and market noise. A number of your listeners will have heard Ben Graham's quote that in the short term the market is the voting machine, in the long term it's the weighing machine. And so while the market's voting has been quite positive over the last few years, in our view, prices have not risen to such high levels that there is simply nothing worth owning. So it is true that at the start of this year we became more cautious and more defensive, but we still think it's possible to own a concentrated portfolio of highly advantaged, well-managed businesses benefiting from long cycle tailwinds that'll drive earnings higher that are also available with a large margin of safety. There's not hundreds and hundreds of those opportunities, but in a concentrated portfolio we're finding enough to do.
That's very comforting for people, I think. It's easy to believe there's nothing out there for you. It's lovely to know that that there's always something. Mark Todd, who I talk to regularly, always says there's always something worth buying.
There is always something. I mean, markets are constantly moving higher and lower, and so these opportunities present themselves from time to time in different regions or different sectors. I think we'd argue it's important you do the work ahead of time so that you're prepared.
Yeah.
You know, prepared, preparation, it really matters. So that when you get those opportunities, you can move quickly. Because we find that particularly for a lot of these high quality businesses, they can be quite fleeting, those opportunities, and so you want to have done your work, ready to move when that opportunity presents itself.
So in light of doing that work, you and your team produce some pretty awesome content. How do people find out more about your thoughts on various topics?
I think the best source will be our website, so magellangroup.com.au, and there they'll find plenty more information on Magellan's process, but just as importantly, a lot of insights into our current thinking on markets and portfolio positioning, those things. We've recently posted a video to the website of Hamish Douglas, our lead PM, presenting recently at our roadshow. That's a video that's well worth watching. And the website also has all the contact details for our distribution team who the audience can get in touch with if they have other questions.
Awesome. Chris, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're very welcome.
And thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. We hope it's been helpful for you in your journey to creating wealth. We always love to hear from you. So if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.